Hi, and welcome to today's episode of Innovation Deciphered. I'll be joined by Jay Morehouse of OnWave, a technology business. He'll be talking, or we'll be talking, about connectivity on site, how that's been a driver of innovation, particularly around safety and sustainability. Really interesting talk. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Tim.
Thanks for coming on today. Just for our viewers, to warm our viewers up, can you just give us a little bit of background about yourself, where you've come from, what you've done?
Well, certainly. I'm a civil engineer by trade. I think when I was younger, I probably wanted to be an architect. Went and did a degree in civil engineering at the University of Leeds. And then I started working for a company called Edmund Nuttall back in the 90s. In the water sector, and after that moved on, and I probably worked in every sector: nuclear, highways, power, maritime, probably everything apart from rail, I'd say. And then I left, I guess, a civil engineering contracting a few years ago, and now I'm COO of a company called OnWave, and we're a technology company really working for the construction and infrastructure sectors.
That's really great. And of course, we have about 18 months ago we made a video with Stuart, who's your CEO.
He is
right.
Yeah.
So really what we're hoping to get is an update on how OnWave has developed, new innovations, new impacts it's having. And I know that you're a big advocate of obviously on-site connectivity.
Absolutely.
And of course, one of the areas that this really plays to is safety.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're doing a lot around, I think, delivering what I'd call site-wide connectivity at the moment. I think historically that connectivity has been getting an office set up and letting people use the internet and emails, and more recently BIM models. But nowadays, I think they've got a lot of technology that they want to use, a lot of safety technology, but a lot around environment and productivity as well. But all this technology around the site relies on connectivity to operate, really. So everyone's got really big digital aspirations, but unless you've got that backbone, that connectivity backbone, you know, you've got a good chance of failure. So that's really what our customers are looking for at the moment.
And of course, your connectivity, this is there not to replace, but presumably enhance any 4 or 5G signal that's already there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing we're seeing is large construction projects, they realise that if they don't do anything, they're actually competing with the local community for bandwidth and, you know, that coverage. And a lot of construction projects in more remote areas, there simply isn't that coverage there at present to do everything that people want to do, to use connected and autonomous plan, or, you know, to take that digital twin out onto site where it can really help people. So that's more and more what we're looking to do at present.
Just give me a little bit more detail on safety, because obviously people want to be able to communicate with people, you know, call an ambulance, tell someone there's been an incident.
Yeah.
But what's the preventative stuff that you see the connectivity helping?
So I think one of the big things we're seeing from a safety perspective is loss of situational awareness. So people inadvertently stepping into harm's way on a project. And then we look at, I guess, a lot of the major accidents in the infrastructure sector and many other sectors, is just people inadvertently stepping into harm's way. So we can let them know that on site, provide information about hazards that are close to their location that they might not be aware of, then, you know, that can, we can really prevent those incidents. And connectivity is really important to, you know, be able to pass that information out.
Is that that sort of geofencing concept?
We use a lot of geolocation technology, and I think it's really useful even from a planning stage, looking at where zonally operations are going to take place on site, where your pedestrians and workers are going to move, where it's safe, looking at all those logistics, but then taking that out into the field during actual construction and make sure that you build as planned. And as I say, again, you know, letting people know if they are in harm's way. whether that's people plant interface or if it's lifting exclusion zones or, you know, simply into hazardous areas like substations or where there's overhead lines. There's lots of different uses for that, I would say.
And do you find your connectivity, we're filming in a city.
Yeah, absolutely.
But of course, lots of construction, particularly infrastructure projects, are long and thin.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm guessing you can deal with both situations.
Yeah, definitely. You wouldn't believe a lot of the challenges we do see can be in central London because there's quite a lot of competition for that bandwidth. So we do a lot of work in central London, but the remote areas we can certainly help with long infrastructure projects. And we're helping Cusby with one that I think is 27 kilometres long at the moment and looking at the potential for a 5G private network for them. And so they won't be competing with the local community. And in fact, they could leave a positive legacy so they can give a public aspect to that private network. And so instead of, I guess, making it worse for the local community, you can actually leave a legacy as well as, you know, enabling your own project to achieve what it wants to.
So let's just explore it's funny you mentioned Edmund Nuttall. I saw in the front cover of Geotechnical Engineering.
Yeah.
There was a picture of one of those dogs.
Dogs
looking over an embankment, taking measurements.
Yeah.
And of course, I can remember back in the day, I spent a lot, my younger part of my career, crawling all over embankments doing exactly that.
Absolutely.
And not without incident, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing there's a technology. Yeah, the third party developed piece of technology must rely on connectivity to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, in that situation, your OnWave enables that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think not just the operation, when we go and do surveys or the like, whether it's with a drone or whether it's with, robotic dog, you know, they collect a vast amount of information, but then taking that information and getting it back to where it's needed, whether that's in, you know, consultant's office or back in the project office, we're collecting terabytes of data. I think, you know, years ago it was megabytes, but now a vast amount of data that we need to transfer back to the office. And that can be the challenge with a lot of that remote collection of data. So what we help with is really that transport, get it back to the office very quickly. So, you know, in close to real time, so people can start working and using it. And not just that, it's then that transfer of information from the office back to the field where it can, you know, really help people around, you know, construction and productivity and safety, delivering all those benefits. So.
But I'm also guessing obviously there's a situation where the sole purpose is to go and collect data.
Of course.
There's plenty of new applications, aren't there? We've got autonomous or semi-autonomous plant.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of telemetry coming off that.
There is, yeah.
Some of it to do with how the piece of plant is performing.
Yeah.
That's been around for a while.
It has,
It goes straight back to Volvo, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It's performing and what have you.
Yeah.
Because if it becomes autonomous, there's clearly a potential safety aspect there.
There is, definitely, yeah.
And there's also a quality aspect about what it's actually doing. I guess if it's grading, you know, what's the tolerance and those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And some really fantastic, new construction plant that's available at the moment, really intelligent. You've got the options for remote control and think very soon fully autonomous, but we've got to go through a journey there through adoption, and that's more about people than the technology not being available at the moment. And that does need connectivity. If you look at a remote controlled or autonomous plant, it almost needs to stream 4 videos in real time to be able to operate as it should, both from a safety and a quality perspective.
Yeah.
So again, that's great in a controlled environment, but if you're starting a project in a remote location, putting that kit in a new field on a greenfield site, then you've got to be able to move that data for it to operate. But once you do, the benefits, you know, they can be huge effectively.
But just taking those points there, you know, you talk about safety, you talk about quality. I mean, surely there's a big issue around resilience of the the signal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you need backup systems or something, otherwise you either grinds to a halt, becomes unsafe, or the quality goes down the tube.
Yeah, absolutely. And we typically, as a standard, we put in what's called N+1, so there's always resilience there. So if we put in a primary solution that's based on satellite, we'll have a cellular backup there. So if something does happen, we'll automatically fail over. And one thing we've seen historically, thankfully happens much less now, is people digging through fiber cables, and sometimes ones they've put in themselves, and again it's been automatic failover should that ever happen. So resilience is really important for people. And I think the other consideration as well is security. If you've got connected an autonomous plant, you need to make sure that's always within your control. So we're seeing a lot of discussions around, you know, around cyber security and how we can, you know, keep that as secure as possible.
And what's led to, I presume you've developed, or there has been a push for innovation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Along that vector of resilience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people's experience, I think historically not having connectivity when we weren't using technology didn't cost people that much, but now it is that extra utility that people need. And I think the cost of not having it becomes really apparent to people quite quickly. You know, if you lose it for a day or two on a large project, there's a huge cost associated with that. So I think that helps to focus people's minds as well.
That's true. I mean, I suppose anybody works in an office.
Yeah.
25 years ago, you know, data wasn't an issue. We had a telephone.
That's right, and fax machine. Yeah, absolutely.
Fax machine. I remember when I started, that was a wondrous bit of technology.
It was.
And my children will never see one.
No, that's right. And things are moving quickly, I think.
Yeah.
You know, 5G is quite a buzzword at the moment. The marketing's probably been slightly ahead of where the technology's been. But I think by the time that's been fully rolled out, we'll be on to 6G. And, you know, we're talking really, you know, incredible speeds at that point. And that's probably coming around 2030. So, you know, technology's moving really fast. It's whether our adoption can keep pace with, you know, how quick things are advancing.
So I'm guessing these sorts of external developments give you you know, you've got to innovate to keep up with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because new applications become possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the faster data speeds.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, We talk to a lot of, I guess, smaller companies, startups as well. There's a lot of new technology coming from various sources, and a lot of that innovation is in the SME sector. So there's really some great engagement there. And I think it's just helping the client organizations, large contractors and consultants to, you know, to be aware of what's there, and, you know, to help them with adoption as well.
And how do you see adoption? Is it, I know not all clients are the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess you've got the really large, well, in the construction sector, you've got tier one contractors, but there again, you've also got informed asset owners.
Absolutely.
Infrastructure in particular, but others.
Yeah.
How do you see the adoption of these sorts of connectivity issues or solutions across the different?
So what we're seeing is, we've had some good engagement, I think, with all those parties, and everyone wants to improve. I think we had some big lessons from a large infrastructure project in the last few years, where we put in something like 16 different solutions for different parties on that project. None of them fully utilised, so you're losing some economy of scale. And then at the end of the project, those temporary systems come out and a permanent system come in. And I think customers now we've been engaging with certainly realise there's a better way of doing that, that they can put in the project into connectivity for the project from day one, that all the supply chain main contractors, tier twos and threes can use. And then at the end of the day, that can be adopted as part of the permanent work. So you've got one system that's a lot more efficient. You can set common security standards from that perspective, and it's just a lot more efficient way of doing things.
Oh, that's interesting. So are you seeing interest or even adoption in using your technology during the actual in lifespan of a physical asset?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
To help with maintenance.
Yeah, I think people are getting much more into that whole life cycle thinking. So they are looking at both the construction phase, but how that can be adopted into the permanent works as well. And 5G, you know, those site-wide connectivity, it's got benefits in the construction period, but again, it can also improve the permanent works. If we can start taking cables out of ducts and taking ducts out of the ground, and use wireless technology instead, then, you know, there's a huge benefit moving forward for projects. And I think that's the next step, really, looking at how we can provide those benefits for that, the end state.
I'm just going to ask this question. There's obviously a very large infrastructure project in London, which involves a tunnel under the Thames.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know whether you used it there, but could this technology be used underground in a tunnel so you get rid of the wires?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a consideration for a few customers at the moment. So, and I think it's taking things a step at a time. They're looking at what we can do externally, but absolutely that's got possibilities for tunnel infrastructure as well in the future.
So one thing we haven't touched on is what impact, if any, your technology would have on the environment. Is there an element there that we haven't discussed yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're doing a lot of work around ecology and enabling works at the moment. So helping, you know, manage those early works, making sure there's no biodiversity loss from construction projects. And that's really where a lot of our technology started, probably back in 2016, local authority highways team. They were having some challenges around ensuring their summer maintenance didn't affect protected and invasive species and areas of those. So again, we use that geolocation technology to alert the people in the field if they were going close to any of those areas and cascade that information out to people in the field.
Badger sets, for instance.
Yeah.
Dig one up.
Yeah, very cool. Great crested newts, water voles, badger sets, protected trees. So, you know, lots of ways it can work from an environmental perspective. And then I think more recently, it's been about collecting information on utilisation of plant and equipment and looking at also perhaps carbon. So what's the carbon usage in reality on site? How much is each item of equipment being utilised? How often is it moving? How often is it actually switched on? And, you know, that's got carbon benefits, but also cost benefits.
I judged a technology award a few years ago.
Yeah.
Someone had run a project, I think it was on Thames Tideway, where they'd been looking at the use, plant usage, particularly 360 excavators.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the sort of rule of thumb in the industry was, well, they utilise 50% of the time.
Yeah.
And I think they found out on that particular job it was 30%.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the engines are on 9 hours a day.
Yeah.
And of course they got this data from Volvo.
Yeah.
And they said, well, why is this? Because they cut off just like cars do automatically.
Yeah.
Except they've all got an override switch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the drivers were overriding it almost invariably.
Yeah.
And the reason was, it was culture.
Yeah.
Because they said, well, look, if I'm sat in a vehicle and the engine's not running, it's judged not fit, I'm not ready for work.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
that was the mindset in the industry.
Yeah.
Which is counter to what seems sensible, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
It's obvious how that came about. But
yeah.
Anyway, that's perhaps a lesson learned there. I hope that's been learned a few years ago now.
Yeah, well, it's powerful information, isn't it? And then it's what you do with that. And it takes a bit of examination into what is actually causing that. Is it a behaviour thing, or, you know, is the driver not able to work for some other reason? But
Yeah.
It helps you take informed action, I'd say.
So with your technology, what do you see the near-term future? What's the next development? What's the next place you want to take this technology?
Well, I think geolocation-wise, it's really good in 2D at the moment, but taking it forward to look in 3D inside buildings and I guess from an operational perspective, that's really useful. And if you look at, say, hospitals and the like, tracking assets, finding out where your nearest item of equipment is, there's lots of things we can do in different sectors around that, and looking at multi-story structures, I would say, is a big thing. I think you mentioned tunnels. There's a lot of interest in, that technology within tunnels at the moment. So that's a big thing. But then also, I think probably the biggest thing, and you'll hear this a lot, is about artificial intelligence and what we do with the data that we collect. And we collect some really great data at the moment, but it does need that human input to say, you should do this or we should do this based on that information. So a bit of help through AI, I think that'll be really powerful.
Well, Jay, I know that, because by many places we're looking at AI,
yeah,
how we're using it in our own work.
Yeah,
it's a massive subject. We could probably have another podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that and the developments you've had since then.
Sure.
But that's been a really terrific talk, and thanks very much for coming in today. So to everyone out there, thanks for watching,
thank you.
We'll see you on the next one.